It is Friday, April 19th, 2019. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. We're not really live, folks. Who cares? Most of you listen or watch after the fact anyways. But today on the program, staff writer for the New York Times Magazine, Jonathan Mahler, will be with us to discuss Planet Fox, an in-depth investigation to the Murdoch family and the ownership of Fox News as it stands today. Mahler's a smart guy. This is a pretty in-depth look at, really, the individual Rupert Murdoch and now his family, which have fundamentally altered, I think, the trajectory of the governments on three different continents, in three different countries, at least, and the politics in particular, creating sort of more virulent strains of conservatism. And it turns out, folks, some apples don't fall so far from the tree. We will get to Jonathan Mahler in just a moment. This is an example of our vacation shows. Today is Good Friday. It is also the day. Tonight is the first Seder of Passover. I will be celebrating with my family for the next two nights. The Passover Seder, yes, spelled exactly like my name, Cedar. That's one of the ways I can get the kids interested in the holiday for about 35 seconds. And then that wears off, and then they are not interested in it. But it is spring break. As you know, if you are a longtime listener of the show, we follow the schedule, basically, of the DOE around here, the Department of Education from New York City. When they go on break, my kids go on break, we go on break, which means that I really don't get a break. Because, I mean, it's fun hanging out with the kids, but after a while, it starts to become a job. Because it's hard. Two kids, I'll be solo. Taking them to Florida, hopefully can keep them occupied.
You doing Disney?
We're not doing Disney.
Good.
That was probably a mistake. Because Disney, but I feel that would have been exhausting too. I was trying to find something. It's very difficult to find something that a 13-year-old girl, soon to be 14-year-old girl, and a 6-year-old boy both like, and more importantly, will not complain about if they're forced to do. So in one instance, I could take the 13 or 14-year-old, I guess it's only a couple of days away from now, so she's still 13, on a ride, and of course the 6-year-old can't go on it, and vice versa. So that's why we can't go to Disney.
I went to Disney around 14, and I was disappointed by how lame all the rides were.
Yeah, well, you would think they were a lot lamer if you went on rides that a 6-year-old could go on.
Yeah.
So, but vacation has started. We've got a whole week's worth of pre-recorded interviews that are fantastic, frankly. But before we get to Jonathan Mahler, I should tell you, one of today's sponsors is Skillshare. Anyone who goes to skl.sh/majorityreport2 is going to get two whole months of totally free access to Skillshare's entire library of super quality online courses and tutorials. Skillshare is a vibrant online learning community that offers courses on everything from design to video editing, photography, business, technology, cooking, meditation, everything in between. There are Skillshare courses for everyone. You'll have no problem finding courses that will be useful to you both in your personal and professional life. Whether you want to sharpen your skills with something you already love doing, or you want to learn how to do something totally new, Skillshare has you covered. They have courses for entrepreneurs, courses on computer coding, web development, personal nutrition, learning new languages, Photoshop, you name it. So right now, I'm going up to Worcester. I'm not as I speak to you, but I'm heading up to Worcester. And my whole plan is, when I have a little bit of time, is to dig into some entrepreneurial things. I am not a great business person, but I feel like I can pick up some broad strokes, and this is the way for me to do it. Also, I'd like to learn how to do Photoshop. Maybe I'll do some audio editing, just in case everybody decides one day to call in sick, which is not in impossible around here. But it is the vast array of courses that you can get from Skillshare that is so amazing. And now you can get 2 entire months of free access to every single course offered by Skillshare. Again, go to skl.sh/majorityreport2. Just think of everything you're going to have at your fingertips for 2 whole months for free. Again, that's skl.sh/majorityreport2. And I've put a link underneath this video if you're watching on YouTube, or if you're listening, I've put the link in the podcast description. And also today, the Majority Report is being supported in part by Simple Habit. It's a mobile app, Simple Habit, that provides a massive and diverse library of 5-minute guided meditations. The Majority Report audience can try Simple Habit totally for free for an entire week when you go to simplehabit.com/majority. Look, there's tons of evidence that show that meditation benefits you in a myriad of ways. And they have over 2,000 guided meditations on Simple Habit, specifically designed for different parts of your day. So just about anything you might be dealing with in life. They have guided meditations for mindfulness, meditations for anxiety, for depression, when you're having trouble falling asleep, meditations when you want to overcome procrastination, or when you're having something important going on at work, meditations designed for parents needed. They have meditations made specifically for when you're waking up, or your lunch break, or when you've gotten home from work, or when you're going to bed. Look, the beauty about this is that even if you don't immediately get into a regular practice with every day, you have the flexibility of doing this at any time during the day, or when you need it the most, or for things you need the most. That's what I like about it. Different people are trying to accomplish different things with meditation. Simple Habit can cater to just about anyone. Regardless of what your goals are, or regardless of how much past experience you've had with meditation, the variety, again, of guided meditations on Simple Habit is what sets it apart. Simple Habit just won the 2018 Google Play Award for Best Well-Being App. It's available on iOS, Android, and web browser. And the Majority Report audience can try it for free for a week by going to simplehabit.com/majority. If you're watching on YouTube, link in the description. If you're listening, link in the podcast description. Check it out. All right, going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Jonathan Mahler on Planet Fox. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program author and staff writer for the New York Times, Jonathan Mahler. Jonathan, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Sam.
So how Rupert Murdoch's empire of influence remade the world. This is a massive undertaking by yourself and Jim Rutenberg in the New York Times magazine. Is it in the magazine or is it interactive? I mean, I don't know how, you know, I guess.
It's both. I mean, it's in the mag. The print format is the magazine. And, you know, digitally, they kind of did a big rollout on the website.
And basically, you put into context the sort of the political role of the Murdoch empire, I guess, and also the machinations. And I should say we're recording this on April 8th, and we're about 7 days away from the premiere of the final season of Game of Thrones. And there's a little bit of quality of Game of Thrones to this that I think it's like which I found, I guess, sort of stunning in a way. But before we get to the sort of the machinations on you know, who took over the company and how, Let's just place the Murdoch, I guess, brand or, you know, lineage in the context of politics, because this is a really, I mean, Rupert, for the most part, has fundamentally changed not just our politics, but like politics broadly speaking. I mean, that's not really an overstatement, yeah. Is it?
No, not at all. I mean, he is, you know, like, I think without question, the most powerful media mogul in the English speaking world. And sort of like what that, he kind of leverages that power through like literally dozens and dozens of newspapers around the world, you know, numerous news channels, international news wire, I mean, until recently, a massive Hollywood studio. And, you know, basically, you know, he's a businessman. He's a kind of an empire builder in the sense that he is all about kind of territorial conquest, wants to just keep growing and growing and growing. And he's also a conservative. I mean, in many ways, like, the ideology is in some ways kind of less important to him than the advancing of his business agenda. But, you know, it's very much there, and he is constantly kind of pushing history to the right. And really what's happened in particular in the last couple of years is that he has sort of seized on this right-wing populist wave that, you know, that we sort of first saw with like the improbable rise of Donald Trump. And, you know, but of course we also saw with Brexit, and really we saw all over the world with kind of right-wing authoritarians getting elected far and wide, like he really seized on that opportunity and sort of rode that wave and, you know, profited from it. And also not just profited from it, but really kind of accelerated it and amplified it.
I want to get to that because that to me seemed like, there was a certain amount of improvisation based upon what you've written as to his jumping on that. But let me go back a little bit, you know, before that, because sure. The thing about, I feel like there have been media moguls that have influenced politics in some measure or another. Maybe yeah. not ones that have done so, you know, when you talk about Australia and New Zealand and UK and then the States.
Yeah, yeah,
but it's also yeah. been over the course of, you know, even the United
decades.
States, which is the,
yeah,
yeah, yeah, we're talking decades and
yeah,
decades.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah. No, it's been going on forever.
No,
yeah.
There seems to me to be no historical precedent for someone who has had this level of durability and this level of sort of vanguard quality to what they're doing, right? Like he's not been following the political trends or safely, you know, sort of like entrenched. He has been blazing my opinion, horrible new path.
Yeah, no, that's right. And I think, you know, another thing to keep in mind too, is he's done it across these mediums. I mean, so, you know, you had, you know, in the old days, media moguls tended to work in like one medium in one country. and, you know, so you had like a newspaper baron or you had a guy who owned, you know, some radio. But, you know, Murdoch has like gone like across all of the platforms and has gone all over the world. So it's like, you know, it's like a whole other kind of media mogul. And of course, like now we're living in a world where like just because of the nature of media, because it's just, you know, shot all over the world instantaneously, media moguls are just kind of inherently more powerful than they've ever been.
And I mean, let's talk about that sort of the ideological sort of businessman divide. And maybe that's there's more redundancy to those the two things than
yeah.
maybe I'm assuming. But I mean, where?
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah.
Well, I mean, but tease that out for us because, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because I mean, like, well, like, the easiest way to think about that is so you have a guy who is his like agenda is like the main, you know, the top five things on his business agenda is grow, buy. And he basically, you know, in order to do that, he needs to make sure that there are no regulations in his path, right? That there are no, whether it's kind of anti-monopoly rules or anti-foreign ownership rules or whatever it may be that might be standing in his way of growing his empire, he needs to get them out of his way. So it's not surprising that he has historically championed a right-wing anti-government, anti-regulatory agenda. So they kind of work, the two sort of work together.
And it's not just a question of expedience. It's just consistent with what he thinks is right. I should be able to monopolize
right.
this stuff. At one point, there was also, he had basically got a waiver. I mean, I remember like going back to like maybe two decades ago when Ted Kennedy was preventing him from owning both, like, I guess Fox, maybe Fox, a Fox affiliate, and maybe it was the Post.
Yep.
And he blew through all of it, didn't he?
Yep, that's what he does. And you know, he even got Reagan to fast track his citizenship application because he needed to be a U.S. citizen to own TV stations. So, you know, when he wanted to get into the U.S. TV market, he went to Reagan and just boom, he became an American citizen. And, you know, he did this also in the UK. I mean, like in particular in his early years there in the 80s with Margaret Thatcher. I mean, he was constantly violating anti-monopoly rules, and she just, you know, gave him a pass. So, I mean, that's just the power that came with his empire, his ability to kind of punish his enemies and reward his allies. It's just like you kind of wanted to be on his good side, and so you did his bidding for him.
I mean, that's the thing that's sort of like I guess maybe maybe foreshadows the sort of the world of social media on some level, where the content and the marketing are the same in a way, right? Like, I mean, his media empire, it seems to me, both functioned to build his business by getting by being political, and was political
yes.
in and of itself. Does that make sense?
No, that's right. And there is, like, inside there is also kind of like a fun contradiction, which is that, like, you know, in order to get government out of his way, he had to, like, cozy up to governments. So it was like, you know, he would kind of get in with, he would have to kind of, his playbook was basically to get in with politicians, you know, presidents, prime ministers, whomever. Then once he kind of had them, then he would just pursue this kind of anti-government agenda.
Right. Well, I mean, this is actually, that's like the sort of the old school neoliberal play is, you know, we're ostensibly, you know, the Mont Pelerin people would argue that's exactly the play. You want to make government work just for a narrow set of interests, and then
exactly.
unshackle
yep.
everything else. All right. Well, so and then let's talk about I want to make sure that we put a pin on the Fox Entertainment, because that is there is arguably, well, I don't know, you'll tell me, but I don't think there is a political agenda in that sort of like that part that they jettisoned. But let's wait till we get there chronologically, because that dichotomy, to the extent that it's a dichotomy of just a businessman with right-leaning proclivities versus a movement conservative guy
right.
seems to have basically described as his offspring, or at least the two male potential heirs to his empire. Tell us about those two.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, you know, if you think about Rupert as being this guy with just kind of endless ambition, right? So, like, you know, if you want to own as much as he wants to own, it, you know, it can't all be political, because he wants to own everything. So then he has these two boys, and you know, he has some girls as well, but the only two children who are in contention for the throne are, of course, the males. And so one of them, James, is much more kind of politically neutral, you know, a centrist, sort of a, you know, kind of a, like a Davos style globalist who wants to, you know, just kind of grow the business, move into emerging markets. And then he has his other son, his sort of favorite son, his eldest son, who Lachlan, who is much more politically minded, much more in line with that kind of right-wing agenda. I mean, people say that he's more conservative than his father. And so, you know, that's the essentially those are the two figures kind of fighting for the throne over the course of their entire lives. And Rupert really, I mean, almost almost deliberately kind of pits them against each other over the course of their lives. And so, you know, it's not surprising that they don't like each other, and that they have these two very different visions for the world and for this company's place in the world.
I mean, as late as, like, I think 2 years ago, and maybe I think even maybe, you know, I had more questions until reading your piece. I didn't realize that Lachlan was so conservative. I mean, it seems to me, I mean, you know, and maybe they're just, it was just I was reading the wrong things, but it seemed to me that, like, James and Lachlan seemed more of like a unit to me, where they were both sort of like James. But
yeah, I mean, I think that was the, you know, they've really kind of gone out of their way, or, you know, over the years, the Murdoch family kind of went out of their way to not, you know, to give the appearance that Lachlan and James were kind of a team, that they were a unit, and they were in fact like running the company together for a couple of years. So, you know, so it's really only, I mean, really only recently, and really only this piece, I think, that has exposed what were these like really kind of serious underlying differences between them.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about this wrestling for control, and then I want to get into sort of just like how, I mean, it seems to me that the Murdoch empire is a but for a lot of, like, for maybe for Donald Trump. I mean, I want to get there. Yeah. We're not quite there yet, but just give us a little bit of a thumbnail of the back and forth between the favoring of James and Lachlan, and what was it that ended up putting Lachlan in charge of Fox News, essentially, which is obviously the most, you know, from a political standpoint, the most important entity at this point. And I should say, like, I, you know, when Ailes left, the I think broadly speaking, there was still enough question about Lachlan that people were like, oh, okay, the ding dong, the witch is dead, and things are going to change there.
Yeah.
And in fact, they got, if you can sort of measure this way, worse. But just give us a thumbnail of like James and Lachlan as they you know, like who was in the pole position at various times.
So basically, you know, Rupert's first choice was Lachlan. He was his eldest son. They, you know, they shared this kind of mutual love of Australia. They, you know, Lachlan was more political, which Rupert liked. Lachlan loved newspapers. James didn't really care about newspapers. So Rupert's initial plan was to put Lachlan in charge of the company, and was kind of proceeding on that path. And then, you know, in the early 2000s, Lachlan kind of started his ascent up the corporate ladder, and then just got into like repeated clashes with some of Murdoch's kind of senior people, including Ailes. And so, you know, it got, and Lachlan came to feel like his father was constantly siding with the senior executives over him, and he started to get really angry. And so, at a certain point in 2005, Lachlan's like, "I'm out, I'm done," and he quits the business, the family business. He moves to Australia with $100 million from the family trust, and he seems to be kind of done. And at that point, James, like, kind of starts his ascent, and then he becomes kind of the presumed heir apparent. So, like, you know, for most of us who've been,
and James is the older
family,
right? James is the older.
No, James is younger.
Oh, okay,
James is younger.
Okay.
Lachlan's the older. So the, you know, the eldest son was the preferred choice, but once he kind of took himself out of the running, it kind of became James's to lose, and that is sort of what happened, because James was then kind of proceeding, and it looked like he was going to become the heir. And then the crazy hacking scandal happens on James's watch in London, kind of leading up to the year 2011. And then at that point, Lachlan kind of reenters the picture, and then it's sort of not clear what's going to happen. And then in 2015, Rupert like brings Lachlan back from Australia. But he doesn't quite displace James. He kind of puts them in charge of the company together in 2015. And so then that sort of is like kind of this last act that has been playing out over the past couple of years. And it like coincided, of course, with like the rise of Donald Trump. You know, the two of them you know, we're trying to run the company together, but like not getting along at all, and having all sorts of problems. And then that sort of like leads to Rupert ultimately deciding that he's going to sell off a big chunk of the company, 2/3 of the company, which is 21st Century Fox, like send James on his way and give what remains of the company, which is, you know, Fox News and his newspapers, basically like his political weapons, give those to his eldest son who kind of shares his politics.
I mean, it really is stunning because it's almost as if like you add up those two guys and you get ultimately what Rupert Murdoch's, I guess just perspective on the world is. If I'm going to sell off the less politically charged elements of this, then I'm left with just this sort of like movement conservatism, and I'm going to give that to the movement conservative son.
Exactly. That's right. Yep.
Okay. So let's just talk about, since we're up to like, you know, the selling off of 20th Century Fox, like how much of an income driver was that? I mean, I understand the mass, right? I mean, it made the company a big company, but in terms of sheer profit, it seems to me like Fox News may have been like, you know, a dollar for dollar more profitable.
Dollar for dollar more profitable, but just in terms of, because of the scale of the studio, and you know, its library and all that, it generated, I think, 2/3 of the revenues for the entire company. So basically selling off, you know, Fox News is hugely profitable, certainly, but he did in sort of one fell swoop sell off 2/3 of the whole company's revenues when he sold off the studio.
Right. And obviously the expenses involved in doing things like films and TV shows are much higher than it would be to do,
totally.
A couple of people sitting in a desk.
Nevertheless, Fox News is very cheap to produce. Yeah.
Now you report that Lachlan was like, why would I want this company now that it's a smaller player? Like it's going from this massive, machine to down to like this more sort of like nimble, just weapon, really.
Exactly. That's right. Yeah. I mean, Lachlan's reaction was like, you brought me back from Australia to take over the family business, and now you're selling off 2/3 of that business. And like, by the way, like the most fun part of it, you know, like Lachlan, you know, having returned from Australia and to take over this company in 2015, sets himself up in like this amazing executive office on the lot in on the Fox lot in Studio City. You know, he's like a movie executive. And then suddenly, you know, one day his father says to him that we're selling the movie studio. So even though he shares his father's right wing politics, and he likes what Fox News does, this is still like a massive shrinking of his birthright, basically, to his mind. And, you know, he was like, his attitude wasn't just like, how can you sell off this company? It was also like, why would I want to run what you're leaving me with? And like, what that is about was not like a political objection at all. It was an objection to like, basically the business model. It's like, you're giving me this like cable news channel with an audience, like an aging audience, like, you know, what is this business going to even be in 10 years? Because, you know, people are increasingly like, you know, turning to streaming for news and have, you know, cable subscriptions are like a, you know, already kind of starting to feel like an anachronism. And then, you know, and then you have this audience of like old white conservatives who are like, how much longer are they going to be around too? So I think he was like, as a business proposition, this thing is like dubious.
And I would just imagine it's more fun just like hanging out in Hollywood.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got that kind of money.
Yeah.
So what changed? Like, why is
Rupert
he running it now?
Yeah. Yeah. With Lachlan, what changed? Why did he decide to do it?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, ultimately it's this is what's left of the company. So, I mean, you know, he could have, I suppose he could have walked away. And he may yet, I mean, you know, this is like this just happened. Like the company just went public, like literally, you know, 2 weeks ago. So he might decide he doesn't want to stick around. But like for now, I think it was like it was what his father wanted. It's what's left of the Murdoch empire, and you know, he kind of had to make his peace with it.
So okay, so James, meanwhile, wants to sell out to Rupert and Lachlan, and has got his sisters also, because they're basically like, this is embarrassing.
Exactly. We don't want anything to do with this company, and we don't want our you know, they own these special shares that are special Murdoch voting shares in this company. They can't sell them to anyone else. And they don't want their, they don't, as you say, they're embarrassed by the company. They don't want their financial future tied up with this company. They don't trust their brother Lachlan to run this company. They just don't want anything to do with it. So they try to sell their stock to Lachlan. And he said no.
And so that's where we are today in terms of like the status of owning.
Yeah.
All right. Well, go back just a little bit and just talk a little bit about, and I know, you know, we don't have too much more time, but talk a little bit about how Murdoch basically, it sounded like he was going to support Clinton. He'd had a relationship with the Clintons. Bill Clinton, I think, in many respects, made it possible for his empire to flourish in this country with the 1996 Communications Act, where it reversed a lot of the ownership requirements. So, you know,
he thought, and above all, he thought that Trump was an idiot. I mean, he truly did. You know, he had no respect for him.
He was right, but something changed. I mean, what was it that turned Rupert and then ultimately got Lachlan to basically say, "We're all in."
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that he tried desperately to support other Republicans during the primary. So, I mean, he was like actively, he was writing checks. He was like, you know, writing tweets and like, you know, promoting, you know, everyone from Jeb Bush to Ben Carson. You know, he wrote a $200,000 check to John Kasich. I mean, he was working to find someone else. And then at a certain point, you know, Trump begins to feel inevitable. He has like a brief, like flirtation with Hillary, but Hillary won't even meet with him because at that point she's getting challenged, you know, of course on the left from Bernie Sanders. So she's like, she can't very well like come into Fox News and sit down with Rupert Murdoch.
Right.
That like would have been a dangerous move for her politically at that point. So, you know, so he ultimately decides he's going to get behind Trump for the primary. And then, you know, for the general election, rather. And then, you know, the assumption, of course, is that he's not going to win. But, you know, as soon as he does, at this point, he's like, you know, Rupert has always wanted to have, he's had these amazingly close relationships with prime ministers in the UK. I mean, beginning with Margaret Thatcher, but like continuing through, you know, Tony Blair, John Major. And he's never had a relationship like that with an American president. He's always desperately wanted one. And, you know, he immediately saw that that's what he had with Trump. And so, you know, so after he like kind of throws the weight of Fox News behind Trump in the general election, you know, Trump is basically in his pocket once he's elected. And, you know, and that's like, that's the dream for him. It's a dream come true.
And so that turns, and what was the theory behind like, we're going to pedal to the metal of this? Like, we've just had all of this we've been exposed as basically being a sexual harassment factory. We have had to announce to our shareholders that we've paid off millions of dollars in the maintenance of the sexual harassment factory. Now what we should do is become even more rabidly right wing. Like, how does that, like, what's the business plan there? Right now, my understanding is that Tucker Carlson is at almost the peak of his ratings and about underperforming his advertising by 50 to 60% because people don't want to be associated with that.
Yeah. 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 I mean, it's like, that's the paradox here, but I mean, he's, you know, the business decision is like that, and you know, and in some ways this like begins earlier. This begins like this story begins, you know, in really during the like in 2008, really the kind of the beginning of the Obama years when Fox News starts to become this kind of like pro Tea Party, anti-government kind of pro, often kind of racist, pro conspiracy theories, you know, the birther movement, et cetera. You know, it's like it has kind of already started to whip up this base, And like, it's,
I got to tell you, Jonathan, from my perspective, like this, it predates this, right? I mean, maybe
well, it does, but right. It does. But like, if you just want to think about like this business decision, which you were asking about,
right?
So like the business decision is basically like the Fox News audience has been radicalized or, you know, is radical. And this is what the Fox News audience wants. The Fox News audience loves Donald Trump. They want Donald Trump. And so the business decision in that sense seems to be kind of simple. The problem, as you point out, is that it's now becoming a problem with advertising.
Right. And so what is the plan here? I mean,
Well, one plan is that they've launched this new service called Fox Nation, which is like a subscription streaming service, which is basically like Fox News over the internet without advertising,
right?
That people pay subscriptions for. So it's like, you know, that they don't have to worry about advertisers. They can just be as like, they can just go as far out on the right as they want. They can be as like, you know, crazy and edgy as they want. And they don't have to worry about alienating advertisers because that's not the model.
They're late to this, though, aren't they? I mean, this is the Glenn Beck model. This is CRTV and Blaze TV. That's what the model is.
Yep, you're right. I mean, in fact, they and you'll recall that they fired Glenn Beck.
Yes, that's when he started.
That's right. They are late to it. Yeah, I mean, they probably should have been doing this years ago. But part of the problem is that because Fox News is like, even though everyone recognizes that this cable model is like increasingly anachronistic, it's still like a massive ATM for them. It's a huge, profit driver, these cable subscriptions still. So even though like you can see when you look out on the horizon, you know that like who the hell is going to still be watching cable television in 10 years. But for now it's like enormously profitable. So they've been short-sighted about it.
Wow. So, okay. So have you gotten any feedback on this piece from like them, from like the Fox world? Are they mad? Are they just ignoring you? Cause they're like, you're with the New York slimes or whatever.
I mean, I think there's like, I'd say both. I mean, they're obviously not happy about the story, but I think that, you know, their take on the story is yes, of course, like the New York Times is biased, is unfair, is, everything else, fake news, the whole thing. So yeah, so that's their, you know, that's been their line on this too, of course.
So really we're going to have much more clarity in the short term, do you think? Like it's been only a couple of weeks since the company's gone public. I would imagine, I don't know, I haven't been following the stock, but I imagine there's got to be some concern with like, this company that's so reliant on Fox News and watching like the power of like, because this is a relatively new phenomena in the past couple of years where corporations step back from politics. I mean, certainly within the context of, you know, Air America was on a blacklist because they companies didn't want to be associated with something that was that controversial in terms of politics.
Yeah.
We've had that problem in YouTube, but this seems to me to be, you know, a potentially lethal problem for Fox.
I think you're right. And I think that, you know, you think about someone like Tucker Carlson, you know, he's, you know, in many ways, like he's kind of the future of the network. So, you know, Hannity, we all think of as now being kind of having replaced Bill O'Reilly as like the big star at Fox News. Right. But I feel like Hannity's like celebrity is so bound up with Trump's, whereas like Tucker Carlson is like working on a different level. He's like kind of pushing this like kind of white nationalist populist thing in a kind of anti-immigrant. It's like, he's kind of, you know, he's part of something a little bigger and he's, you know, younger. And so, you know, you could, and his ratings are now like, he's now like really starting to challenge Hannity. So like, he's enormously popular with the Fox News audience. And with the Murdochs, they love him. So you think like, okay, well, that's where things may be going over there. But as you say, like, he's having a lot of advertising problems. So like, it does seem like, you know, if the problem is if like what your audience wants is something that no advertiser can stomach, then, you know, where does that leave you?
Right. Well, I guess we will have to either wait for your sequel or just watch ourselves.
No sequel. No sequel. We'll all see.
All right. Well, yeah, I don't want to. We're going to hold you to both those answers. Jonathan Mahler, the piece is How Rupert Murdoch's Empire of Influence Remade the World. People can check it out in the current issue of the New York Times Magazine or online. Thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Sam. Thank you. Take all the strength I got to get to where I want. But I know somehow I'm going to get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know. Choices made for the option where you don't get paid.